All right, hey guys, welcome to the studio today. We are trying something new. We are streaming from Australia. We have Dr. Adam Gavine, StreamYard, with us today here in the studio. Adam has founded Back to Function Chiropractic. He's an author and the co-founder of Wasabi. Welcome, Adam.
Thanks, Mike. It's a pleasure to be here.
Adam, just to give the audience a little context, we met through the Biohacking Network via Dave Asprey in the Biohacking Conference a few years back, and we became friends, and we've been networking, and we just came fresh off the last Biohacking Conference in Dallas, Texas. So talk about Wasabi. So this is a new endeavor that you're exploring, and you're the co-founder, and you've actually partnered up with Dave Asprey, the father of biohacking. So that's pretty exciting.
Yeah. So it's a cool story. So I joined Dave's Upgrade Collective about 3 years ago just to learn some more about biohacking and be part of a community and stuff. And one day Dave was talking about Shockwave, and I kind of put my hand up and I said, you know, like, I'm a bit of an expert in that field. I've been using it for 12 years now. And I worked for a company, one of the biggest shockwave therapy companies in the world. And they used me as a instructor. I'm a fully qualified instructor with that company. And they would send me, I've been to China, I've been to Indonesia, I've been to Korea, I've been to Thailand, and I've been to Malaysia, teaching courses in shockwave therapy. So Wasabi Method is kind of born from that. A lot of these big companies, they won't sell the device to non-medical people, even though the device itself has a class one FDA approval, which means it can be sold to non-medical people. It's essentially classified as like a massage device. So we approached this company and asked them if they wanted to partner up with us, and they didn't want to partner up with us because they didn't want to sell to non-medical. So that started our journey, and we found another distributor, a manufacturer that we could basically become a distributor. And now we're selling the devices, and we can sell to non-medical and kind of do what we want. So we're being kind of rebels and pioneers in this industry.
Yeah, I like that. Trailblazers. That's pretty cool. Yep. So I was not able to make my rounds to the Wasabi booth at the conference, but I know you were treating Dr. Daniel Amen, who I've been following since, gosh, I think I found my way to Doc Amen in 2012. When I found his book, Change Your Brain, Change Your Life. And that was pretty good. That was pretty amazing. And so,
yeah, that's a great book. I have that on shelf at my clinic. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was pretty excited that he was at the conference this year, because that was pretty cool. You also authored a book, Back Pain.
Yeah. Yeah. So I wrote that about 10 years ago already. Time flies. But basically the reason I wrote it was because I had so many patients coming into the clinic and talking about their back pain, and they would just go and Google stuff and be like, oh, what do I do for back pain? And then they'd come into me and be like, oh, should I do this? Like, I remember one guy in particular, he goes, oh, my friend had back surgery for his back pain and that really helped him. And should I have back surgery? And I'm like, well, the problem you have there, for one, there is no surgery for that. Right. And I go, like, two, it's like, why would you want to go straight to surgery? Like, it should be your last resort. Yeah. And now, interestingly, it's in the research world, they're showing more and more that conservative care, doing whether it's chiropractic or osteopaths or physio or rehab, is just as good as surgery in terms of outcomes. It costs less, and there's potentially way less problems. Like you don't get an infection from, you know, coming to see a physio or a chiro to do exercises. You know, there isn't a potential that you won't wake up from the general anesthetic from coming to a physio or a chiro. You know, people don't take this into consideration. And like, for instance, I had a patient the other week. She had, she had a meniscus tear. And I told her, you know, you don't have to get surgery, but she went and got surgery anyways. And she actually flatlined during the surgery. Oh, they told her when she came back out, they were like, oh, you actually flatlined for about 10 seconds. We had to bring you back. And you're like, people don't think of that. They just go, oh, yeah, surgery, it'll be fine. And it's like, no, you actually died. And then they brought you back.
Yeah. Surgery is serious. My mom suffers from back pain. She actually, I just spoke with her just earlier last week, and she has spinal stenosis. She's had multiple surgeries, like regarding her back, her low back pain and different things like that. And it's only made it worse. She's finally come to the conclusion that they keep recommending surgery after surgery, and then you need this surgery to correct the last surgery. Yeah. And it's just a hamster wheel of that. And she's done with that. So
well, the research actually shows the more surgeries you have, the percentage goes down. So the first surgery has about an 80-85% success rate. Second surgery it drops down to about 65-60, and by the third surgery it's about 50%. So which is like a crapshoot. You got a 50-50 shot on your third surgery of getting a good result. And then if you keep going, it keeps dropping down.
Not to mention you have your recovery time and, you know, the older you get, the less apt you are to recover at a faster rate, you know?
Yeah. One of the main things they show with these studies is the main thing with surgery is people take time off and do the recovery and do the rehab. So they actually did one study where they had one group go get surgery and do all the recovery and rehab and all that stuff. And they had another group where they didn't do the surgery, but they did all the rehab and time off work and all the same things. And they virtually had the same results.
Yeah. I found my way into just with my back pain and my different mobility and muscular issues. I train a lot in jiu-jitsu, and we talked about that. And I work out avidly. I walk, I do a lot of stuff. And years ago, I mean, I found my way into, you know, going to the chiropractor and doing things like Thai massage, massage therapy, chiropractic, and dry needling therapy were like my three go-tos, you know, to maintain functional back health for me. That's what worked best. I'm not a medications guy. So when I would end up with severe back pain and have to be off of work for any length of time, my doctor would want to prescribe me medications. And that was only masking the pain. And that was horrible for me because I didn't like taking the pills because it wasn't fixing or correcting anything, as you know.
Well, if we go back to my book, if you can read what it says at the top there.
Yes. It's a treat the cause, not the symptom. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There you go.
And so that's fundamentally what we're trying to get through to people. And, you know, like I've had to have tough conversations with some people where, you know, say they were like a truck driver and they have back pain because they're sitting for hours and hours, you know, like sitting 10, 12 hours in a truck. And I'm like, your job is perpetuating that condition or exacerbating it. So like, you might have to change what you do, you know, and do a job where you're not sitting all the time, you know? And, you know, I tell people there's kind of three ways to get better from, you know, whatever musculoskeletal problem you have. I go, one, stop doing the things that piss it off or perpetuate the condition, right? Which is like what I was talking about there with the truck driver. Two, start doing things that make it better. So whether it's exercise, you know, going for walks, doing some yoga or Pilates or rehab exercises. And number three is basically get some body work. You come see someone like me or a massage therapist or osteopath or physio and get them to work on the tissues. Now, when you work all three of those, I tell people it's a synergistic effect. So you get 1 + 1 + 1 = 12. So they amplify each other. Two of those three are totally in the patient's wheelhouse, avoiding the things that irritate the problem or piss it off, and doing things to make it better, right? So you can do that every day. You don't need me. You don't have to pay me. Well, essentially, a lot of people don't know what's irritating their back. So I can tell you in the first visit, you know, after we do an initial history, I listen to you and I go, okay, well, it sounds like, again, with the truck driver, it sounds like after you've been sitting for a certain amount of hours, your back's really bad. So it sounds like sitting's contributing or exacerbating your problem. So we need to modify that. You don't have to change your job, but what you need to do is get out of that truck every hour. Walk around, pull into a pit stop, walk around the truck a few times, do a few of the core exercises, get back in the truck, and then off you go. Because, you know, like they automatically go to, oh, I don't have time for that. And I'm like, well, you better make time because you're making time.
You got to make the time.
Yeah, you're making time to come see me. I'm like, well, make the time. And that's only like 2-3 minutes. Literally hop out of the truck, do a few laps, you know, walk a few hundred meters and do a few core exercises, stretch out a little bit, then hop back in the truck. But if you do that every hour and he's in the truck for 10 hours, well, that's 10 times he's going to do that. You know, and if he's doing his core exercises 10 times a day, what do you think's going to happen? He's going to get stronger and he's going to get more functional. So again, that's going back to the things.
Yeah, I agree. So I call that preventative maintenance. And so I'm all about preventative maintenance. So I do all of the stretching and the core exercises because I don't have time to be laid up for a month, 2-3 months. In back pain, you know, that's just, it's not conducive to my business, my mental health, anything. So I also found my way to a posture corrector. Also, I drove a Mustang for years and those seats in a Mustang and a sports car, they're scooped. And so your shoulders are more like this.
I don't know why they do like that. This. I
don't know. Yeah, not good. That is not good for your back. So I had no lumbar support in that Mustang. And so I found the posture corrector. And what that does, it's like, it kind of looks like a gun holster. It's got two like Velcro straps. It goes, you know, under your arms. Yeah. And it's like in a figure eight. And then just pull the straps up and it pulls your shoulders back and keeps your neck in alignment. And I'll wear it for like 20 minutes a day. You can wear it over or under your clothes, whatever is comfortable. But that has helped huge. And I had thought that too, that when, as I got on in years driving that Mustang, that was contributing to my back pain. I was like, this is not good.
But even things like that, like you could just buy a new seat for it, you know, and that would help immensely for you. So it's not, again, no, I always tell people there's always solutions to all these problems because people are like, oh, I got to sell the Mustang. And it's like, no, you don't. You can just buy a new chair.
At the time, I didn't know that that was this. It was only me looking back. You know what I mean? Is that I was realizing, shit, that seat was scooped. I did end up selling that Mustang, but I had to, when I started up my business, I had to sell that Mustang for payroll. I had to sell that Mustang for payroll when I first started up when. And
maybe one day you'll get it back and then you'll get some better seats.
Yeah, right. So I am in the market for a classic. When I started my company, well, when I had that Mustang, it was I bought it brand new and it was a 2010 GT V8. And I had to sell that baby for payroll. And I walked down I walked down to Enterprise after I sold that car and I had to rent a car until I was in a position to get another one. But yeah, those were the days.
Yeah, you got to do what you got to do, right?
Yeah, but driving, like, that's huge. I love that you used the truck driver as the example because that was another thing. When I started my business, I was on the road a lot, and I was in that Mustang, and that was definitely contributing to my back pain. And I had to, there were days that I couldn't function without a TENS unit hooked up to my low back. So I would tuck it. I had like a pocket sized TENS unit, and I would, you know how like a TENS unit has the, the gel pads and they, So I would stick them on my low back and then tuck the cords in my pants and then put the little, device in my pocket. So no one knew I had it on, but it would time. Like you would wear it for like however many minutes, it's the max. And so I'd set it on that. It was almost like it would power me up. It'd power my muscles up. Like I was a robot, like I was battery operated, because it would keep me upright. And then when it clicked off, I like went down like this. I was like, oh shit.
Like Pinocchio.
Yes. Oh my God, man. Back, there's no worse feeling than back pain for me.
No, it's the number one cause of disability in the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's oh huge. My goodness. It's huge. And you know, the thing that I learned when I wrote the book is that we still don't understand it that well. And we our treatments are not great. Like, as you said, most GPs, they'll just give you medication. Now, again, going back to my ethos of treat the cause, not the symptom. Pain is a signal. Okay. We need to change our view of pain. So I tell people imagine pain is like a baby crying. If a baby was crying, that if you had a baby and it was crying, you wouldn't just go get some duct tape and cover its mouth and go, oh, there we go, solve that problem. Right? You would actually check the baby out and you'd be like, okay, do I have to change its diaper? Or is it hungry? Is it tired? Does it need some love? Does it need to be burped? And if it was the diaper need to be changed, you change the diaper because it was starting to get a bum rash, and you sort that problem out. What happens to the baby? It stops crying, right? Because you've solved the problem. So if we view pain as a signal, it's your body telling you something's wrong. So in a way, we should be thanking our body when you have pain. It's like, oh, thanks for letting me know I've got something wrong with my shoulder. I'm going to go see someone. I'm going to go see a physio, chiro, massage, or I'm going to learn what the problem is. And I'm going to treat the problem, treat the cause, so my pain goes away. So you see how you're changing the whole framework around pain, from being pain is bad to flipping it around to pain. Pain's good. Pain's your body telling you something's wrong.
Yeah.
So you can go address it before it becomes a major problem. Your body's trying to help you. Your body wants you to be functional, strong, formidable, have endurance and be resilient. It's trying to guide you. It's not just trying to knock you on your ass.
Right.
It will if you don't pay attention. If you have pain. So again, if we go back to the baby analogy, what happens to the baby if you don't address the problem? It screams louder.
It continues to cry, yeah.
Okay, it goes louder. And that's what happens with people that end up getting chronic pain, is you're not addressing the problem. So guess what the body does? It turns up the volume. It goes, okay, you're not listening to me. You have a problem here. And your brain's going, well, if he keeps using the shoulder, it's actually we're going to tear something, or it's going to dislocate, or we're going to have some kind of structural integrity problem. And it's trying to prevent that. So it's going, hey, come on, do something about this, until it's such a point where you actually can't move your arm or you can't go to work. But guess what? Now that you're not at work, you can go get it looked at. It's much better. It's giving you the opportunity to go address the problem.
I like your perspective on it, because it's your body communicating with you. It's communication. Yes. I love that. So now tie wasabi into this. So a wasabi treatment into, because you were going into the shoulder.
So one of the beautiful things about our device, and if we go back, I'll give a little context of what our device does for listeners, is it's called shockwave therapy anywhere else in the world except the US, because they're it's the FDA doesn't let them call it that, but I always tell people a rose by any other name, still a rose. It's technically, we're supposed to call it radial pressure wave therapy, because it doesn't actually reach, there's a certain threshold of energy it's supposed to reach to get to be defined as a shock wave, which is 100 millipascals. Our device doesn't quite reach that, but it doesn't matter. There's kind of a sweet spot. As long as you're in the sweet spot of energy in terms of what we call energy flux density, as long as you're in the sweet spot, it's getting the job done. You don't have to get to 100. It's like you don't have to drive 100 miles an hour to get somewhere. You can, you know, right. you can drive 60 miles an hour and still get there, and it might be actually a little bit safer.
Yeah.
So what we use is it's acoustic sound waves. So basically it looks like a gun, and there's a ball bearing inside that gets pushed by pulses of air. So there's a air compressor that's attached to the handpiece. And so the ball bearing gets pushed and it hits the end piece, which is a metallic tip. And that metallic tip moves, so it creates some kinetic energy. And that creates sound. Almost imagine like if I hit a gong and it goes boom, like that makes those sound waves. So those sound waves travel into the tissue that we put. So if I'm doing the shoulder, if I put it on the deltoid muscle, it will go into the deltoid tissues. You need some contact gel, because the sound waves, they lose all their energy through air. So you need some, like it travels really well through water. So you just have like a contact gel, like ultrasound gel. And then at least usually about 99% of the energy gets through to the tissue. Now, when we expose these tissues to these sound waves, they found something really cool is it stimulates healing and repair of those tissues.
Okay.
So it's basically like tapping on, it'd be like me tapping on your shoulder and telling your brain or your body, hey, come here and clean up the mess on aisle 5.
Yeah.
Right. Cause you might've had an injury there, even if it was a long time ago. I can stimulate your body to go to that area and help heal and repair that area. Cause it's basically forgotten that you had an injury there. So I'm going, hey, come here, clean up this mess. And then the body goes in there. It makes all these, when you stimulate it with the sound waves, it stimulates all these reparative chemicals. So which we call like fibroblasts, tenocytes, in bone, they're called osteoblasts. So you can actually cause things like bone to heal and repair better. So after someone's had a fracture, where I can actually treat the fracture to help. By the way, fracture is just another word for broken bone.
Yeah.
I can help that bone heal faster because I'm stimulating the bone to make more osteoblasts, and osteoblasts will help the bone knit together much faster. So it's all these things are non-invasive. So versus having to get injections or surgery, you don't have to do that with our device. So it has so many effects. And going back to pain, one of the main effects is it stimulates the what are called nociceptors, which are pain nerves. It causes them to release a chemical called substance P. Now, the way that works is kind of like if you've ever eaten something really spicy, you know how you like your mouth burns for a little bit?
Like wasabi?
Yeah, like wasabi.
Yes.
We'll get to that in a sec. So it burns. And then after a while, it kind of goes numb. Like you can't feel your tongue and stuff, really. So that's the same premise. The capsaicin, when you eat something spicy, is causing those nerves in your mouth to release substance P. Once those nerves, they only have a certain amount of reserve of substance P, and the substance P is signaling your brain that something hurts. So once I've depleted your nerve of the substance B. It can't really send the signal to your brain that it hurts. And then you get a local analgesic effect. And that's so we can get that virtually every time we treat you. So when we're, if someone's got a painful shoulder, even if I don't know exactly what the problem is, I can still treat the area to give it a local analgesic effect. I can help the blood flow. That's another one of the physiological effects, is it stimulates what's called VEGF, which is a vascular endothelial growth factor. And that causes your body to create new blood vessels in the area, which we call angiogenesis. So it's again, it's stimulating. I tell your body, hey, you don't have enough proper blood flow, enough, the plumbing's not good here. So you're gonna increase the plumbing to that area. A lot of the time it's the muscle's just not getting enough blood flow. Think of blood flow like water to a plant. If the muscle's not getting adequate blood flow, it's gonna start to wither, just like a plant if it's not getting enough water. So I'm gonna increase the plumbing to that muscle so that it's getting adequate blood flow ongoing. So it does two things. It increases the angiogenesis, but it also stimulates when it taps, it gives you mechanical effect. So if I just tap your shoulder, I'm going to increase the blood flow to that area. But this is also going a step further, and it's working on the physiology to make new blood vessels, which is really cool.
That's so fascinating. And then Wasabi also treats sexual function in men. Isn't that right?
Yes. Yeah. So that's a good segue, because that's exactly how we help with that. So one of the main causes of erectile dysfunction is it's not enough blood flow. They call it vascular erectile dysfunction. So if the blood vessels in the penis aren't able to dilate properly, then you won't get a proper erection. Okay, so they have a measure, different measures of erectile function, and you get graded on where you're at. And with our device, you can usually increase your grade by 1 to 2 grades with treatment. So it's non-invasive, so you don't have to get injections, you don't have to pop the blue pill. You know, and again, we're changing the physiology. So it's a long-term effect. It's not just this will work for a week and then you have to come back. It's like, no, we're actually increasing the blood vessels to the penis so that you get ongoing benefits from it.
Fascinating. Yeah. Well, that's definitely, that's important for men. You know, sexual function is a very key part of life. So that's a major... Yep. That's a major plus to Wasabi. So
yeah. Again, it's one of those things that we don't talk about a whole lot, you know. And the numbers are astounding. It's approximately 50% of men over 50 have some kind of erectile issue. 60% of men over 60, 70% of men over 70. So, like, you can imagine if you were, you know, 60 years old and you couldn't get an erection anymore. Like, you know, for some of these men, that they lose a sense of their manlyhood. They lose a sense of being able to be, you know, intimate with their partner. There's a lot of psychological ramifications for it, especially for men. So if we can help people with these issues, it has tremendous effects on not only their physical health, but also their mental health. I'm sure a lot of people over 60 probably still want to have sex, you know?
Oh, 60's young. You know what I mean? We're, you know, with the pioneering efforts of our man, Dave Asprey, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, longevity is key. And so you're going to live to be, you know, over 100, you're definitely going to need your sexual function. And I think, like, to your point with all that ties into men's health, just human health overall, depression. Well, depression in men is, you know, at an all-time high, and suicide rates are up there. And so just
anything. I just read that men's suicide rates are 6 times higher than, than women.
I read that.
6 times. That's incredible. Like,
there just aren't enough resources, you know, for men. Think that, you know, just getting back to just things like sexual function, that's not a hugely covered topic, you know, enough as it should be, because it's part of life. And
it's almost taboo. And because we've made it taboo, then a lot of these men, they don't talk about it. You know, they don't want to bring it up. They feel
emasculated.
And they're going to be judged and all that. And it's like, no, it's the opposite. Like if you're having trouble, especially early on, if you address these issues early on, like we actually just shot all the videos for our men's sexual health module. By the way, when you buy our device, we sell all the education that goes with it. And the difference there is most other companies don't give you comprehensive education.
Yeah.
And again, especially if you're non-medical, you can't even get the device to start with. So we've made certain standards that we won't sell you the device until you actually pass our safety course. Like, so if you bought my device today, I would send you the safety course. You need to pass a quiz before I actually ship the device to you.
Yeah, which I love that. And I know that you have standards and practices, because I know you off camera and we've talked about this. And I know we were talking throughout the course of you developing your training modules. And I think that, you know, I really respect that you respect your clientele, you know, enough to develop a training like that to educate and support.
We want people to be safe first and foremost. Yeah. But also, like, if you're going to get the device, you might as well learn how to do it right. So we have, like, I'm not an expert in treating men's sexual health. So I went and got an expert, and he's the one that shows you how to do it. And we're also going to have face-to-face seminars coming up, hopefully one later this year. And myself and Michael, the physio that does our education for the men's sexual health, we're going to fly out and we're going to show people how to do it face to face, so you can learn hands-on training. But that's to complement the online education, because the online education, again, it's fully comprehensive. I think just for the lower limb, I have like 600 slides on a PowerPoint to go through. About the same for upper limb. So I go through every condition and almost every muscle, and I show you exactly how I would treat it in the clinic. So you don't have to guess. But the cool thing is you don't have to sit there and go through every single one. You don't have to memorize the whole thing. You know, it's like, okay, I'm going to treat the brachioradialis today, because this guy's got a brachioradialis problem. So just look up the brachioradialis and look at how I would treat it. And then you can do it exactly how I would do it. And, you know, probably not best to do it while you're right in front of the client, but, you know, I would recommend, I know this person's got this problem, I'm going to watch the video and read up on it before the treatment, and then I don't look like I'm incompetent. So
absolutely. Yeah. Well, plus what I love too is that you've made it available to the general public. You do not have to be a physician or a hospital or doctor's office to purchase the Wasabi method. And not only do you provide the comprehensive training, you know, the treatment itself is customizable for the individual purchasing Wasabi, which I love. You know, there's always different elements.
The caveat I need to put in there, though, is if you purchase it and you're non-medical, you're only allowed to treat yourself.
So you right. Yes.
So that's a big caveat. People are like, oh, I'm going to go treat other people. Well, you there's two things that you need to treat others. One is a license to touch other people. So you know, being a physio or a chiro or osteo or massage therapist, you need a certain you know, at least like some kind of diploma or degree where you're legally allowed to touch people. And then two, you need some form of insurance. You need some liability insurance. Because if you can, there are some contraindications to what we do. Like you can't go over the lungs because it causes air to expand. So you can actually cause someone to rupture their lung. So things like that. But in the education, that's very clear. I have the contraindications in every single thing. So whether it's biceps, deltoid, hamstring, quads, every single one has the slide that has a contraindication. So you should have that memorized by the time you get through all the education, because it comes up every time.
Yeah. Well, that's important. I mean, that's good though, that you have, that the public is able to buy it. I mean, if we can operate heavy machinery, vehicles, drive vehicles, operate lawnmowers, weed whips,
you know, that's this. I make the joke. It's like, you don't need a license to buy a chainsaw, but you can cut your leg off.
Exactly. There, you can have a horrendous home accident with a chainsaw, but don't treat yourself muscularly.
Exactly. You know, I find it kind of funny that, you know, we have rules like that. It's like, oh, you can go buy a chainsaw and use it without any training whatsoever.
But, exactly. You know, but God forbid you heal yourself with a tool that's accessible to the general public,
And safe. The other thing is, it's super safe. Like I talk about in my seminars, there's this one meta-analysis, which is basically a study where they look at a bunch of other studies that have been done and they compile them. So in this one, it had 19 different studies, randomized control studies, and there was almost 2,000 clients or patients in the combined studies, and they had zero adverse effects, which is unheard of. Like if you look up a drug study, there's always adverse effects. Like, you know, to have, and this had zero. And I'm like, when I tell people that at seminars, I'm almost waiting for people to, you know, like a standing ovation, because that you never get that. That is like the holy grail of things. The worst thing you usually get with Wasabi is you might be a little bit tender after treatment.
Tender.
Yep. You might have some reddening. You can have what's called petechia, which are little, like they look like little blood bits underneath the skin.
Yeah.
So that's if you have it turned up a bit too high, or some people their hemodynamics, which is their blood, like how thin their blood is and stuff, is different. So some people bruise really easy, and some people can get like the petechia faster than others. So
that's common with cupping also.
Yeah. So similar thing. So we tell people just be wary of that, you know how to use it. And all those things, they go away within a few days anyway. So it's not like you're not going to be stuck with those things permanently.
I don't bruise easily, so I'm pretty lucky in that respect. I'll do the cups on my own. And I actually have a new cup that I'm using. It's red light infused.
Yeah. It's so got that's pretty cool. It's got the LED in it. Yeah. I've seen them.
Yeah. Yeah.
They actually have penis pumps, going back to the ED thing, that have LEDs in them. So you get the kind of the best of both worlds. And going on what you're saying there, what we advise people to do is combine a lot of these therapies. So when we give a protocol for, say, treating erectile problems, we want you to use a penis pump. It's actually recommended. And if you can like find one that uses red light therapy as well, well, that's even better. So, you know, it's all these things work synergistically. And if you can find something that complements, you know, if you're doing cupping as well as the Wasabi method on your shoulder, and then you're doing some exercises and some range of motion stuff, well, that's awesome. You're going to get a better result than if you only got Wasabi by itself. So we encourage people to use other methods and techniques, because that's what I do in my clinic. I don't just do Wasabi. I do, you know, I'll do some adjustments, I'll do some soft tissue work, I'll use some kinesio tape, I sometimes dry needle, I give people exercises, we do some range of motion stuff. I have a ton of tools in my toolbox. Sometimes I'm like, I'm almost confused by this, like, what should I use here? Because I have so many things that I could use.
That is not a bad thing. I'm ready to book a flight to Australia right now and claim my treatment.
Yeah, yeah. You still get a free one. You still get a free free treatment, but it might cost you a little bit for the flight and accommodation.
I'm in. I want to see some kangaroos anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we have some around.
Cool. That's awesome. But I agree with what you're saying too, because for somebody that's into biohacking and all that stuff, I try a little bit of everything, and like I'm into the preventative maintenance. So you have to try one thing in conjunction with another. I think it was you. We were talking the other day and I was explaining to you that I do a treatment called PRP, platelet-rich plasma therapy, for alopecia areata. And in conjunction with that treatment, I do the red light therapy. And so they go hand in hand, and one serves the other. So,
yeah, it just makes sense from a physiological standpoint, you know, a therapeutic standpoint. It's, you know, it's like, well, this is increasing blood flow, that's increasing, you know, mitochondrial function, that's increasing, you know, if we go back to Wasabi, the list, I need to put the list on the website, actually. There's about 20 things that it causes, like things like it causes the release of stem cells. So that's huge. It causes the release of collagen. So like you can use it on skin and stuff. You can help plump up your skin, help with wrinkles.
You can use Wasabi on your face. It's safe for your face.
Yeah. Yeah. It's safe. It's safe on the face. It doesn't feel great.
Beauty is pain.
Yeah, it's somewhat unpleasant, but you can control the pressure. So you can control the energy and how intense it is. So you just start low, you know, and we go through these protocols and in the education. That's why we highly recommend you get the education, even for seasoned practitioners, whether you're a doctor, nurse, chiropractor, whatever. You know, if you haven't used this device, you really kind of don't know what you're doing. So I've been using it for over 12 years. I've taught seminars around the world. I'm reading research almost daily. So I'm really on to this, and I will give you the top notch education, what not to do, what you can do. You know, like even one of the slides I have is like tips and tricks in the education. So for every, you know, if I say you're going to do the face, I give you tips and tricks of what settings to use, you know, how often you can use it, all these things. So you're not sitting there guessing going, oh, I'm not really sure what to do. We give you all the answers. If we don't give you the answers, you can email us. You can, you know. I do weekly talks. You can become a member of Wasabi Method. We do monthly meetings. You can email me. I'll during the meeting, I can answer your question live. We go through, I share current literature. So you can, if you want to read up on any of the new studies, we share them. We'll have a forum as well where if you're a member, Wasabi Method member, you can interact with other members. You know, you could even meet some of them if you wanted to and be like, oh, can you show me things that you know? Can you, I'm not as good with the hand. Can you, you know, maybe you have a guy in the forum that's a specialist on, you know, like physiotherapist that works on hands. So then he could be like, hey, come over. I'll show you how I treat this. You know, we really want to make it inclusive and sharing this knowledge and, you know, knowledge is power. So the more we can get people to interact and share this stuff. And I learn too. Like I tell people when I go on seminars and stuff, I learn every time I do a seminar, because people will be like, oh, I do this in the clinic. And I'm like, oh, that's cool. Tell me more about it. Because I'm not arrogant enough that I think I know everything. That's why I keep reading and learning and, you know, go to seminars myself, is because I want to learn. I want to get better at this stuff. You know, that's
and your clientele. Yeah, the individuals purchasing the method too are going to help, you know, guide along too with information. Everyone's going to have a different individual experience, so that's education in itself. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, and we're not afraid to encourage that. You know, if people have problems, that bring your problems to us. We're the good thing with us compared to some of these the big companies, is we will give you that personal service. When you email us, you are emailing myself and my partner Anna, who's the COO. You know, I see these emails. She talks to me before she responds to any of them, and oftentimes, you know, I'll call these people or I'll email them myself. So, you know, there's not too many other companies where the founder or CEO will you know, call you up and help you with your problem. They have minions. They have minions for that.
You're not wrong about that. That is true. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I have to actually stop doing that.
Yeah. Well, look, I can do that now while we're small, but maybe I'll be eating my words probably in a few years when it's like, you said you could call me. And it's like, yeah, there's about 500 people that want me to call them every day.
Yeah. Oh, it's a toughie. So yeah. I want to get back to your book, because, as you know, I started my jiu-jitsu journey years ago, and I started training under Gracie University, and you actually have Henner Gracie you interviewed him in your book, isn't that right?
Yeah, page 78.
Yeah, talk a little bit about that process getting interviewing him.
Yeah,
my back pain, Renner Gracie. Yes. So yeah. What was the scoop with Renner back then?
So Henner, it was, he had a bulging disc in his lumbar spine, and he couldn't do what he loved to do, which is BJJ. And, you know, he was seeing all these practitioners and there wasn't getting better. So eventually he figured out that it was his core wasn't strong enough, and wasn't, I'll qualify that, because in the literature, it's not just about strength for your core. It's actually more about endurance.
Okay.
So your core needs a certain amount of endurance. So if I'm bent over doing gardening for 10 minutes and my muscles fatigue after 1 minute, well, then I'm 9 minutes in the danger zone, where things are, you know, slipping and sliding and not being stabilized, because that's what the core does. The core holds your spine, the two vertebrae. When you bend, it should just tilt like that. With people with instability, what happens is as you flex, the vertebrae on top will want to slide forward. You can see that. It'll want to slip forward, which is what we call translation. So it flexes and then it translates. Now imagine you have the disc in between those two vertebrae. So think of it like an Oreo cookie. You have cookie and then cream in the middle and then another cookie. So if I grab the top cookie and I slide it forward, it's going to pull and tear on that cream.
Yeah.
Right? Which is the disc. And that's how people end up with disc problems, is their muscles, which are supposed to control how much that vertebra moves, aren't doing their job. So it becomes unstable and uncontrolled. So they bend forward, this slips, it pulls on the disc, it causes some damage at a microscopic level. If it does that enough times, it becomes macroscopic, then you end up with a, you know, what they call like a bulging disc or herniated disc. And, you know, I can show a little picture in here. Yeah, so you get this type of thing. Can you see that?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's in the middle, that's called the nucleus. And it's almost like a jelly in the middle of the donut. Now it's surrounded by these concentric layers, which are called the annulus. Now the annulus, it's like an onion. So it has all these layers.
You're making me so hungry.
these onion layers hold the jelly in the middle here, right? So yes. What happens is you cause here, you can see it's ripped through these onion layers. And now the jelly in the middle starts to leak out like a lake that's created a river. And eventually what you can have is basically the nerve that comes out here, the spinal nerve gets kind of squashed or irritated. And then you get pain down your leg, which people call like sciatica.
Yeah.
So that's how that happens. So the key to this is you'll start to get pain before it gets to this level.
Right.
Okay. So again, that goes back to early intervention. You know, don't wait till it gets really bad.
Preventative maintenance. So to your point of all of this, how I corrected my back pain was through the core. So I used to work with young men with intermittent explosive disorder, and I would go into work every day and I never knew. It was so unpredictable each day. So like these young men, like I would be chased around with a tire iron and have a hydraulic jack thrown over my head and through my car windshield. And I mean, it was like 12 hours a day of like TVs, you know, coming at me, all kinds of different things. So I had to train myself to run backwards. I worked with a lot of folks that were institutionalized and had psychotic breaks. And so, the days could be very violent. And so sometimes it can end up in a tussle on the floor, and then I'm in back pain. And so I really had to work to correct my back pain after an incident that led me in bed for about 3 months, you know. And then I remember my doctor prescribing me just a ton of pain medications, which I hated. And I said, I never wanted to feel like that again. And so I found my way into chiropractic therapy and then correcting. I was working on my back muscles all the time until I realized you have to start with your core to fix your back, not your back muscles. So yeah, that led me to a six pack abs. And then, you know, it was just, from then on, I just kept it up because I was like, wow, what a beautiful aesthetic bonus, you know, for correcting a painful issue. So, yeah.
Well, yeah. And that's essentially what Henner did to help his back is he recognized that the power of the core in terms of helping stabilize his low back. And once you stabilize that loose vertebra and it stops slipping forward, well, it's Dr. Stu McGill talks about, he's pretty much one of the best back pain guys in the world. He talks about this in his seminars. He goes, it's like you have a scab and every day you keep picking that scab. And then you go, why does it keep bleeding? Well, because you're picking the bloody scab. So this is what happens when most people with these chronic back pains, he talks about, he goes, it's not because they have something complex. It's because they have a scab, they have an injury, and every day they're doing something to piss it off. They're picking the scab, and then round and round we go. Right?
Well, so I just went through this experience. I have to fess up. I had been experiencing tennis elbow just horribly for the past several months, and I was continuing to piss it off. Because I wouldn't stop doing I dialed back my workouts, but I didn't quit them to let them heal. I didn't let the scab heal, so to speak. So I was still doing push-ups and I was still doing light dumbbell workouts and can't do it. I finally had to stop it, let the scab heal. And like now I'm back to my elbows are feeling pretty good right now. So,
yeah. So again, that goes back to the three things I was talking about at the start where, you know, avoid things that piss it off.
Yeah.
Well, and often the problem is people are unaware of what's pissing it off. And that's where, you know, if you see someone like myself, I can basically tell by listening to you in the first visit. So that's a skill that's underdeveloped in a lot of practitioners. And it took me years to get better at it, is just listen to people tell you the answer.
Yeah, sure.
Like clients and patients, I just have to stop, shut my mouth and listen. You know, I heard a good adage. It was, you have two ears and one mouth. You use them in that ratio, you know, listen twice as much as you speak.
No, that's a good one. I say that often when I'm when you're building teams and developing teams, or just even building any kind of relationship, whether it be personal or business or anything. People just tell on themselves all the time.
Yeah.
So all you have to do is be willing to listen. People are telling you all their shit.
Yeah. And the other thing I heard on a podcast the other day, they were talking about to make an impression on someone. Often you just have to be a good listener, because people love talking about themselves, right? So if I'm talking to you and you're telling me a story and I'm like, oh, that's interesting, tell me more, you're going to have a great time, because after that conversation, you're going to be like, oh, wow, Adam's great. Even though I didn't do anything, I just shut my mouth and listened to you talk. But you're going to have a bunch of endorphins, and you're going to have, because you enjoyed the time you spent with me, not because I did anything other than active listening.
Exactly. Active listening is huge. Plus, you have a way of making a person feel valued and heard authentically. Yeah. So you have that, like that's very authentic in you. But to your point of just active listening, like, it does. It provides a person, a sense of feeling valued and heard and comfort. Yeah, that's important.
Yeah.
But that's for a practitioner, that goes a long way. For a doctor like yourself, I think that goes a long way for anybody that you're treating, because I have not been so lucky. I had the best doctor. I had the best alopecia doctor treating me. He had the best bedside manner, man. We developed like a brotherly relationship. He was so good. And he moved on from that practice. And I have not been able to develop another relationship like that with, you know, doctors moving forward. And it's very rare that you come across a doctor or practitioner that just can develop relationships with their patients on that type of level. It's pretty rare. So it's important. It's bedside manner is important.
Yeah. It's a skill. I didn't, like, when I first started, I was almost like, I treated people like they were cars and I was a mechanic. You know, it's like, come in, shut up, lie down, let me fix you.
Get the hell out. Right. Yeah. No. But organically it comes.
That's how we're taught. That's how we're taught at college and university is like, you know, it's very structural, and you know, they have this problem, they have a meniscus problem. This is how you treat it. You give them this rehab, you make sure they do it, and you know. That's one part of it. That's one part of the puzzle. Like, a lot of it is, I can almost tell how a patient's going to go based on our first interaction, just whether they're, you know, open. Like, I have some patients that I can already tell they don't think they're going to get better.
Yeah.
They don't think I can help them. And I almost feel like saying, like, why are you here? Like,
that's part of the problem. So step one is believe
you can get better, you know, and even with really nasty or chronic problems, you know, there's solutions out there. You know, when I dislike when people use the saying, I've tried everything, and it's like, really? That's literally impossible, because there's new things being invented daily.
You're right.
And you've been around the world. You went to the top mountain in Tibet and worked with the monks there. And you went to the Amazon forest and worked with shaman. Oh, you didn't. So you haven't tried everything.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
My perspective on that is I'm willing to try all of it I was that committed to healing. So, I mean, I, and to everything you just mentioned, like, yeah, I went, I, I have a shaman. I see a shaman. Yeah. I do all the, anything I can find my way to that provides a sense of healing for something that's ailing me. Oh my gosh, yeah. I'm on board. Yes.
Yeah. Well, whatever works. If someone, you know, someone waves a magic wand over you and you get better from that, then hey, who am I to say, oh, that's not scientifically valid? Who gives, you know?
Right. Different strokes for different folks.
At the end of the day, most of what we do is placebo anyway.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I believe that your body hears your thoughts. So if you're telling your body that it's not going to work, it's not going to be receptive to the healing process. It's just not. So
yeah, well, we're made up of 70% water. And have you seen those studies from that Japanese researcher where he said nice things to the water and it made these beautiful crystalline structures?
And yeah, we talked about that. You and I talked about it.
And then he said horrible things to the water bowl, like you're ugly, you're useless, you're a waste of time, you're you know, bad. And it made all these really not so nice structures. So when you think our body's made up of 70% water, so your body's essentially listening. So watch what you think and watch what you say. And I so strongly believe in this that I will correct patients when they come in and say bad things about their body. They go, oh, this is my bad knee. And I go, no, no, no. I go, that's your good knee. That's your better knee.
Yeah.
Or like,
I love that.
This is your symptomatic knee. It's simply symptomatic. And if we go back to pain, it's your body letting you know that something's not functioning optimally.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. But what it's language. Language is huge. It's your body's listening. It signals. Everything we do is a signal into the body, whether it's wasabi method with acoustic sound waves going, all it's doing is sending signals to your body, to the master chemist in your body to release things that make things happen. Whether it's, you know, with wasabi again, we talk about osteoblasts, we talk about tenocytes, we talk about fibroblasts, collagen, stem cells. It causes the release of what's called lubricin around tendons. So it lubricates the tendon more. Angiogenesis, VEGF, PIGF, PCNA, like all these growth factors, all we're doing is saying, hey, make more of this. Make more, like it'd be like when you exercise. Really, all you're doing is telling your body, make more testosterone, make more growth hormone, make that muscle bigger.
Yeah.
Right? That's it's a signal. It's a signal going into the body. And so if we view things as simply signals, whether it's light, whether it's sound, whether it's, thoughts we think, things we say, you know, all these things are just signals. And if we start viewing health and longevity as that, then it opens up things so that we're not so stuck in the dogmatic, there's no science, you know, there's no science to back up that claim. And it's like, well, if the person does it and the result is reproducible, well, that's a level of science. That's an N of one, you know?
Yeah. I believe that your body picks up on all that. I was fully responsible for mismanagement of my stress levels over the course of, you know, start entrepreneurship and starting up my business. We talked a little bit about that before off camera. You experienced some of the same stuff, but I manifested alopecia areata. You know, it was brought on by stress. My stress levels were higher than they had ever been due to certain experiences. And I wasn't taking care of myself like I already knew how to do. I already had all the tools in my toolbox. Prior to me starting my business, I was a well-oiled machine. And then, you know, I had a few curveballs come my way. Yep. And I just fell off my care track and my self-care track. And I wasn't following my normal practices, like using my juicer. When I told you I found my way to Doc Amen, Doc Amen was the one that got me juicing. After I read Change Your Brain, Change Your Life, I got on the juice train, and that did change my life. And one thing led to another after reading his book. And so I already had all those great tools in my toolbox. And then, you know, just it all got away from me. My stress, got away from me, and then I manifested that within my gut health. So that comes alopecia. It starts in the gut and it attacks your hair follicles. And so it was back to getting back to talking, you know, positively to myself. Well, not only did the gut, did the alopecia kick in, but my back pain started up again. So it was like, I was low back. My hair was falling out rapidly from the alopecia. I mean, to the point where I lost all of it on the back of my scalp and my eyebrows, my eyelashes, patches of my beard. And there's no cure for that. So the only, like, I think I Googled it at the time and it said pray. And I was like, holy smokes, that was pretty powerful, because I was like, wow, there's no... I was looking for a med, anything, you know, to help mitigate that. And there wasn't anything. So it was all about back to getting into my toolbox, how I talk to myself, how I treat myself, and what I'm putting in my body, and mindful meditation, yoga, all those things. So back to biohacking, which led me to our man, Dave Asprey, who ultimately led me to you.
Yeah. Well, that's going back to what you're saying. It's these pillar practices. You know, if you're doing the right things, health is not I'm going to get healthy, then I'll be good. It's, you have to maintain it. It's an ongoing thing. It's like brushing your teeth. You don't just brush your teeth and go, oh, I'm good for this month. You know, like, you know, brush your teeth every day. Like I want people to think of health like that. It's like, you know, when people come to me and they're like, how often should I do my exercises? Or when do I, like, if someone's got a, like you with the tennis elbow, people, I took this from one of the best tendon people in the world. Her name's Dr. Jill Cook. And she, you know, she tells her patients when they say, when can I stop doing these exercises? She's like, when you're dead.
Right. Never.
You know, it's like, when can I stop brushing my teeth? When you're dead. Like, do you want to keep your teeth? And right. So that's the thing is people, when people are in pain, they're very motivated. They do their exercises, because I had someone last week that it was a similar thing. And they were like, you know what? I got out of pain and I stopped being so consistent with my exercises, and the problem came back. And it's like, well, no shit, Sherlock. It's like, you know.
Yeah, you hear a lot of people talk about that take medications for depression. I've heard so many people over the years tell me they got on whatever antidepressant and then stopped taking it because they felt better. And then it was worse after, because I'm like, oh, well, now you need it forever, you know, because that's how your body fixed it.
Yeah,
in your mind. But I got right on board with Doc Amen, and food is medicine, you know.
Yeah, of course it is.
For me.
And again, so it's a signal that goes into your body, and it causes chemical reactions and effects. You know, your body's literally made of food, right? Like your skin, your muscles, your tendons, your ligaments, your blood vessels, your brain. Like, so think, if you're putting McDonald's into your mouth every day, or some kind of fast food or highly processed food, or, you know, like bad oils, like canola oil or vegetable oil, like that, your body is using those as building blocks to make things in your body. Like just think about it. Why would you to build this thing out of crappy materials? Like, it makes no sense.
No, you know? My body rejects that stuff. So every now and again, you know, everybody enjoys some processed foods in moderation. I'm certainly one of the people that do that stuff, but it's not my everyday practice by any means. And I regret it every time. It's almost like, it's like drinking alcohol. It's like drinking alcohol. Like, my body will tell me the next day when I get up at 2 a.m. to go to the gym, I'm like, you son of a bitch, why did you eat those? You got me. Now you start talking about Oreo cookies and jelly donuts during this. And I'm like, I'm off carbs right now.
Well, you know, I'm the same. I'm doing a no sugar, low sugar kind of thing. And, you know, like, I love dark chocolate, and it's so hard Like I got in the bad habit of after a meal, I would always have it was like my finisher, you know, a nice piece of chocolate. And now I can feel like, again, it signals the bacteria in your gut are basically controlling you to say, go eat this because we're hungry.
Right.
And that's what cravings are. It's the bacteria inside you going, hey, we want to be fed dark chocolate. And so I have a craving for dark chocolate.
It's so funny you brought that up, because for dinner tonight, before I came here to get on the podcast, I had a pound of ground beef and a pound of ground beef, onions, and four eggs. And then after, I had two dark chocolate bars to wash that down with, because I was like, I want some chocolate. And I don't usually get chocolate cravings, you know, too often. Yeah. But when I do, I go with it because I can, you know. So I don't deprive myself. But right now I'm actively like kind of, I really like bread. So that's not something I deprive myself of. And but I, you know, bread makes you just feel like shit sometimes. It does, like in the morning. I feel a little hungover when I do that, but I'm trying to dial it back right now because I have some training goals that I'm working on. But but I'm not on an all carb anything ever. But I'm definitely restricting certain things. So, but I won't be going to get any jelly donuts after this interview.
No, it's not ideal. Like the funny thing is, I look at stuff like that, like when I go to the shops sometimes now, and I'm just like, it almost disgusts me, because it's like when I imagine myself eating it, I imagine how I feel after, and my gut's just
so that's now, how I feel about alcohol.
Things I used to like, I look at now and I'm just it's like, even just the thought of eating it, I feel almost like my gut turn, and I'm like, oh Jesus, I can't eat that stuff anymore.
Yeah. There's nothing better than eating clean. It just is good. Yeah. I do like pizza, you know, and every now and again I'll do my pizza thing. But but for the most part, I'm a good clean eater. And you know, like I'm not opposed to ever having a cocktail or a drink or an alcoholic beverage, but I just really abstain more than anything. And it's just to that point right there. Like, I train on a regular basis, and I like to I don't want to contribute to any type of depressive, you know, state of mind. And I know like alcohol is definitely depressant.
I think it's like, you work hard to get where you are. Why would you undo all that hard work by, you know, like I get going out, and, you know, you might be at a wedding or you know, a 50th or whatever. And you have a few drinks to be social and for a social convention. And, you know, that's fine. But if you're doing it like every week, that's a different story. You know, like if you're doing it once in a while, you know, it's not a problem. But there's also things you can do to counteract. You know, you can make sure you're getting enough electrolytes, you're staying hydrated. You know, you can use some like charcoal to bind to some of the toxins. You know, like things like that. And then you're not going to pay such a heavy price the next day.
Oh yeah. 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 No, that's just, I really try to just abstain more than anything, just because I like to be able to function. I like to be able to get up, do my workouts, you know, and keep a positive mindset. But So we were talking about the biohacking conference that you and I attend, but I know you were working on a biohacking initiative over in Australia. Is that right? Is that still underway?
Yeah. We put that on the back burner. I still have a company called Optimize Your Health. We're on Instagram as well, but we were doing biohacking retreats. But I've just been so busy with Wasabi lately that I haven't had time to work on that. But we're probably going to maybe look at that again in 2025. We did one last year. This year. And it was really well received. We do all the biohacking stuff, whether it's breath work. We had a breath work coach. We did ice baths. We had PEMF there. We had red light therapy there. We had a sauna. I did functional movement assessments on people. We had someone talk about just like biohacking. We had a functional medicine doctor did a talk. So we have almost like kind of like TED Talks throughout the weekend.
You sent me the info and it looked amazing. I wanted to attend that. If you remember, I was going to, but I had a crossover thing. Like I had something at the same time and I couldn't, and I was hoping to this time around, but really you've got, things are taking off with Wasabi, which congratulations on that, you know?
Amazing. Yeah. Yeah. Thanks. It's kind of like a good problem. It's it is
a good problem.
My one business that I had to kind of shut down the other one, but,
we want
to do more in the future, because I think people really need that type of reset. You know, there's so many retreats and stuff nowadays where, you know, you go and you eat some nice food and you relax and you get a massage and you go do some yoga or whatever, and then you go back to work on Monday and you get back on the hamster wheel, and then it's, you know, it basically undoes all the good that you did. So what we try to give people things they can take away. We give you some baseline measures. So what I do with the functional movement assessment, I'm actually going through, I make you do a bunch of tests. I give you a score to see where you're at. And then we can give you a program. You work on that program. You come back in 6 months or a year. We test you again. We see where you are compared to your baseline, you know, whether it's things like blood pressure or cholesterol levels or body composition. We can do DEXA scans. We can measure all these things so you have a roadmap of where you started and where you want to go to. And then we work with you to, you know, whatever you want to achieve. So say you go, I want to be able to run a marathon. Okay, well, we can do that. But you got to let me know what you want to do, you know, whether you want to run a marathon or whether you want to bench press 300 pounds. They're different goals and there's different training, because people just go to me, oh, I want to get fit. I'm like, well, I pull out a book. I show them the world record holder in the marathon, and then I show them the world record holder in the shot put. And I go, well, they're very different beasts. They're both world record holders, but one guy's, you know, 6'7" and 300 pounds of muscle. The other guy's 5'9" and, you know, like 130 pounds of just lean muscle and can run forever. So, you know, it's like, what do you want to achieve? Figure out what your goals are. You can't have both, though. You can't be the strongest man in the world and the best marathon runner in the world, because they're different body shapes and forms. You can't, what was the saying I heard? You can have anything, but you can't have everything.
Right. Well, so to your point too, is that it's individualized. So, like I was talking to a friend of mine about, you know, you see, like, say there's a celebrity on the cover of Men's Health and Fitness and he's giving his workout routine. So people are going to flock to that magazine because they want to look like whoever the guy is that's playing fucking Superman or Batman or whatever, you know, like one of the superheroes, Wolverine or whatever. And so you're going to get the Wolverine workout. Well, not everyone's body is made up to have those aesthetics. It's just not. So whatever those guys are doing isn't going to work for you necessarily.
But those guys don't look like that all year round. They look like that for 6 months while they're filming, you know?
Yeah, they're filming and they're being paid for that. So there's a lot of, you know, you're looking at...
I got paid $10 million to look jacked and ripped, that's not a problem. I'll go to the gym every day because I can afford to. You got to remember, these guys aren't going to work like you and I every day and working a 9-to-5. It's like they work out every day with a personal trainer and usually have a personal chef.
Yeah. And I'm all that stuff for myself. So like I'm a self-starter. I get up. I don't have an assistant. I prep all my meals. I do all my grocery shopping. I train my body myself. No one else would be able to do that for me because I'm super specific in how I do everything. So like I'm my best trainer in those respects. As far as like other things, I have coaches and other aspects of my life, but for my body and my body goals and all that stuff, I'm my best trainer for that. I don't have I had posted some photos, time lapse of like of my fitness journey, and it doesn't change much because with me, the point was someone was it was kind of a hater comment, like, there wasn't much change in the progression of the photos or whatever. There is, but not much. But the point of my post was consistency for me. I'm not training myself to be a bodybuilder. I don't want to carry that. And so then I'd have to buy all new clothes. It's a whole thing. So Adam, where can people find you on social media? Where are, so, what are your handles?
So my handles are at @wasabi_method and at @back_2_function. So that's my clinic. And the other one is @optimize_your_health is the retreat that we do. And our website is wasabimethod.com if you want to check us out and learn more. Happy to get any messages or emails from people that want to find out more. We do discovery calls through Wasabi Method. I do them about twice a week where we do Zoom calls. You can just book in and listen and ask questions. Yeah, like I said, we're small and nimble company, so we like to get down on the ground level and interact with our clients and people interested in buying.
Perfect. Well, Adam, we will put all the links up at the end of this video. And thank you so much for joining, and I'll chat with
you
soon. All right.
Take care, Adam. I appreciate you. Thank you.
No problem.
Bye, guys.
All right. Take care, guys. That's a wrap.